Now, since the election of Donald Trump in 2016, there's been a lot of attention paid to America's growing urban-rural divide. But our next guest says there's another significant divide that's getting less attention, the economic and social gap among cities themselves. As some cities get richer and richer, think places like San Francisco, Seattle, and New York, others, like Dayton, Ohio, are being left behind. That's where our guest has been reporting from, but Dayton's story is one that's been playing out in many mid-sized post-industrial cities across the country. Alec McGillis joins us now. He covers politics and government for ProPublica, where he recently wrote the piece, How Struggling Dayton, Ohio Reveals the Chasm Among American Cities. His story was produced in collaboration with Frontline. Their new documentary, Left Behind America, is available to stream at pbs.org. Alec, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, as we mentioned, the urban-rural divide, that's gotten a lot of attention. What got you focused in on this divide between different kinds of American cities?
Well, it's something I've been kind of fixated on for quite a while now, just in my travels as around the country as a reporter. It's something that you just can't help but notice. If you move frequently between places like Seattle and Washington on the one hand, and then cities like the one I live in, Baltimore, and cities in the Midwest like Dayton, on the other hand, it's just really stark how big these differences in levels of prosperity and dynamism have become. We've always had richer and poorer cities in the country, of course, but the gaps have just gotten way bigger than they've ever been. If you just look at income numbers back in like 1980, there was much more parity between the sort of wealthier cities and the more kind of conventional ones, and now the wealthy cities have just gone off into the stratosphere in terms of their wealth and income levels. So it's something that I've really been fretting about as a journalist for some time now.
And what's driving that growing gap between, I think one of the stats you give is comparing Dayton, where you're focusing on, in San Francisco, almost double the per capita income in San Francisco to Dayton, much bigger than gaps had been, as you said, in the past. What's behind this?
Well, there's several drivers of it. One is the nature of the tech economy. Back when the internet was first spreading, the thought was that, hey, this will be something that will allow us to kind of live and work anywhere we want, because we can be connected anywhere, and it'll just kind of allow wealth and jobs to kind of spread out. In fact, the opposite has happened. The nature of the tech industry is one that it rewards agglomeration. It's sort of a winner-take-all effect where it's become very clear that companies feel like they, in fact, need to be together, need to have their programmers and engineers all together to be innovating in one place. You want to be pitching your proposal to the venture capitalists in person. So you want to be near where they are. So there's this kind of winner-take-all effect to the tech economy, where it kind of all just flows to one or a couple places. Another part of it is the growing concentration in our economy. We have no secret that a whole bunch of industries are getting more and more concentrated in just a handful of companies. And so as the economy concentrates in certain companies, the wealth also concentrates in the cities where those companies are based. So as Google and Facebook dominate ad revenue, more and more wealth flows to the Bay Area where they're based. As Amazon more and more dominates retail, more wealth flows to Seattle where they're based. And finally, I think that it's worth thinking about the cultural, sort of social-cultural aspect of the trend, too. And it has a lot to do with the fact that people, highly mobile professionals, are looking for security, because you're less likely to work for one company now for your entire life. So you're going to go to a place where you can be guaranteed to find work in your line of business, even if the one job doesn't work out. So if you're looking for a job in biotech, you're going to go to Boston or San Diego instead of trying out this one intriguing job in Rochester or St. Louis, because you want to be where all the other jobs in that business are. There are a whole bunch of different reasons for it, but it has become, I really think, one of the defining trends of our time.
Talking to Alec McGillis about his coverage of a growing divide among American cities, some big economic winners, many not doing so well. And I want to focus in now on your reporting on Dayton, Alec, though I'll say a lot of the elements of your story might sound familiar to people in Janesville or Kenosha or smaller cities that have lost maybe a paper mill in Wisconsin. But paint us a picture of what Dayton is looking like these days.
So, Dayton is really a classic story of the industrial Midwest. It was a extraordinary hub of innovation and prosperity back in the early parts of the last century. One of the remarkable facts I came across in my years of reporting in Dayton is that, in fact, the city, in fact, was claiming more patents per capita around the turn of the 20th century, in the late 1890s, thereabouts, than any other city in the country. So you had the Wright brothers, of course, but then you had all these other major industrial innovators and inventors, especially in the automotive realm. The company that the city was most famous for was National Cash Register, which made cash registers and later ATM machines and all sorts of other things. And so the city, goes through a very kind of typical industrial decline in the 70s, 80s, 90s, which was parallel to a really big population decline. The city's lost almost half of its population, the city proper. But really, a lot of the real hits the city's taken have been pretty recent. The 2000s, the first decade of this century, were just brutal for Dayton, which likely traced large measure to China's being led into the WTO in 2000, which really hammered a lot of manufacturing areas. So the city lost just tons of auto-related jobs in the first decade of this century. And then National Cash Register left the city as well in 2009. So it took some real crushing blows. There are signs, there are definitely signs of it coming back in certain areas. That it's, it's downtown is seeing some upticks in, downtown loft residences. It's still very fortunate to have a big Air Force base right on the edge of town. There are places that might be even worse off in Dayton right now, but the gap that has opened up between it and these sort of winner-take-all cities is just undeniable, and it's bigger than ever.
You mentioned the Great Recession, and it seems like with Dayton and from some of your other reporting, a lot of other cities, things they'd had problems leading up to that, but were kind of scraping by, and that the Great Recession was a last straw that Dayton and other places are still feeling the impacts of 10 years later.
Definitely. And then for Dayton, it was then rapidly followed by just this horrific opioid epidemic, which has hit Dayton really as hard as just about anywhere. The city has the good fortune of being right at the crossroads of two big interstates, 70 and 75, which has made it a real kind of like transport and logistics hub. But it also made it a really easy target for traffickers coming up from Mexico. You had a really high rates of prescription painkiller usage in the city as a result of its kind of blue-collar heritage. And then that very quickly transformed into heroin usage when they clamped down on the painkiller prescribing. And then fentanyl came in like an angel of death last year, and the city, in the first half of last year, the city was basically the highest in the country for per capita overdoses. Just stunning figures, and they've turned somewhat of a corner now. Hopefully, that there seems to be less fentanyl in the supply, but that has just been absolutely devastating for that area.
Yeah, you point out a contrast in your reporting on this, saying that while cities, as you were saying earlier, that are doing well, have this self-sustaining thing where they're successful and more people move there to join in that success. With the opioid story, once a city like Dayton starts to have an opioid problem, it brings in the distribution, and then people who are seeking the drug come into there. So it's this horrible self-sustaining negative thing going on.
Exactly. It's what I see all around me here in Baltimore, where I live. It's the same kind of thing where once a city gets its reputation for having a really plentiful drug supply, it brings in substance abuse, people who are suffering from substance abuse disorder. And it also, these cities also tend to have pretty strong safety net services, social services, shelters, food banks, soup kitchens, drug treatment centers, things that are often not available in the towns and suburbs around them. And so people also come into them seeking that kind of assistance. And so you just notice it in Dayton that a lot of the people you speak to who are panhandling on the corners or, you know, looking to buy drugs or at the shelters are actually not Daytonians from Dayton proper, but they've come to the town over the years because it has what they need.
We're talking right now to ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis about the growing economic and social divide among American cities. Alec's recent piece focuses on Dayton, Ohio, but he says it's a story that's playing out in similar cities all over the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you hearing the story of your city in one way or another? Do you live or have you lived in a place that's experiencing that sort of thing? The factories have closed, opioid problems, not seeing the success that that some other cities are seeing. Or do you see some signs of hope if you're in a city like this? What's your city doing to attract new residents, maybe new businesses or new jobs being created? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis. His recent piece is called How Struggling Dayton, Ohio Reveals the Chasm Among American Cities. It was produced in collaboration with Frontline. Their new documentary is Left Behind America. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has the loss of manufacturing affected your town or city? Do you feel like the difference, the gaps between American cities, especially the bigger, thriving coastal cities and the Midwestern so-called Rust Belt cities, is being overlooked? Do you have questions for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Alec, as you mentioned, the population of Dayton went down, dropped by about half of its peak. But there was one sign of hope with immigrants, actually refugees coming into the city, moving into some of these inexpensive properties and starting businesses.
Yes, Dayton has made a concerted effort to make itself very welcome to immigrants and refugees, and as a result has been branded a sanctuary city by some folks on the right. But one of its successes in this regard is that it became a magnet for a fascinating community of little-known community of Russian Turks. They're ethnic Turks who centuries ago migrated to Russia and the former Soviet republics and were persecuted there and got refugee status last decade for a couple of years. And a whole bunch of them, about 2,000 of them, gravitated to Dayton, mainly because it is so affordable there. And they have been incredibly successful there. They've become a force mainly in the trucking industry and have renovated whole swaths of the old north side of town and have gotten involved in politics and are really sort of a major player now in the city. You see them, they're so successful that a whole bunch of them have bought them very fancy cars, and you see them driving around Dayton, around the fairly sort of humble streets of Dayton in Maseratis and Porsches and Jaguars. It's just quite a sight.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Andrew joins us from Appleton. Andrew, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What'd you want to bring up?
I just think that not only in urban economies, but also in rural economies where I'm from, opioid epidemics have really skyrocketed. And in cities, I think that people recognize drug use as a problem and in many ways have more ways to deal with it via resources and funding. But in rural economies such as Rhinelander, where I'm originally from, it really seems like an under-addressed issue. Nobody really seems to talk about it, either because of stigma or stereotypes. People don't really recognize that rural areas have that drug rate problem, but it has really skyrocketed so much that in a population of about 5,000, it's nearly impossible to not interact with somebody or many people for that matter, that have not been directly affected by this.
Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. It's definitely a common problems in some ways between cities, mid-sized cities like Dayton and rural areas. Alec, with the question of resources, one thing really stuck in my mind from the Frontline documentary. You're talking to, a medical examiner or a coroner, and he said they'd had to use some of the resources that they usually keep in reserve for mass casualty events just to keep up with the toll from opioids.
Yes, I mean, it has such a huge impact there, but the caller raises a really good point about the effect this has had in small towns, too. I did a whole other piece last year that was set in rural Ohio, rural southeast Ohio, Appalachian Ohio, and it was about the epidemic there. And one of the things that came through was just how, first of all, how hard the epidemic has hit there as well, but also just how unprepared the towns there are, both in terms of lack of resources, lack of treatment options, but also simply in terms of the mindset there in these small towns, where there was much greater resistance, for instance, to the quite effective treatment options that are for opiate addiction, which are effectively substitute opiates, methadone or buprenorphine, which are quite available in bigger cities, but are really, really hard to find in rural areas. And so the epidemic has just been so tremendously vast and devastating in ways that I don't think have yet fully registered in those winner-take-all cities where a lot of our sort of most influential kind of leaders, thought leaders, reside. They have not, I think, fully absorbed how bad it's gotten in the mid-sized cities like Dayton and in the rural areas like rural Wisconsin.
Andrew, thanks for that call. We're talking to Alec McGillis about his reporting on a growing gap, a divide among American cities, the haves and have-nots. He focused in his reporting on Dayton, Ohio. Alec, one wrinkle, a new company opened up in the Dayton area you report on, a glass manufacturing company, I think it's Auto Glass, but owned by a Chinese manufacturer. Can you tell that story?
Yes, this is really quite a remarkable development. One of the big hits that Dayton took in the last decade was the closure of a huge GM plant just south of the city in 2008, right around the time of the financial collapse a decade ago, and more than several thousand jobs were gone just like that. And a few years ago, though, a Chinese company moved into that exact same plant and retrofitted it to make auto glass. And they now have more than 2,000 people working there, which on the one hand is good news for Dayton. On the other hand, the problem is that these jobs pay a lot less than those GM jobs used to. Workers are starting at about $15 an hour now. That's actually up from initially it was just like $12 an hour. This is really difficult work. They've had a lot of workplace safety issues, and actually just a few months ago, a worker was crushed to death there. It's a sort of a comeback of manufacturing jobs in a way, but it's a different sort of job than the Dayton area was used to back when you could make $35 an hour working for GM.
Right, I was going to say this is a common theme among the people you talk to. A worker saying, yeah, I used to average $35 an hour. Now there are these $15 an hour factory jobs. A couple of you talked to, a guy talking about his parents were a chemist and a registered nurse. He and his family had just moved out of a homeless shelter, even though they were both working. The opportunities aren't there. The people who had middle-class parents do not have middle-class jobs available to them.
Right. You really kind of see this downward mobility present all around you, and it's reflected in the numbers. The city, there's a story in the local paper just a day or two ago that the city has still not gotten back to where its median incomes were before the crash. The jobs have come back just in terms of the unemployment rate, but the income and wage levels have not. And then meanwhile, so if you have this kind of downward mobility that seems very present all around you. And then to the extent that there's upward mobility, it often involves, this is I think one of the key things for these kind of cities, it often involves people leaving. The you have this real dynamic now where people, you know, the college-educated young people in a lot of these places, these cities, end up going elsewhere to pursue their careers. And you see, it's not just a matter of going to, you know, New York or the coasts. It's also a matter of going to sort of the regional winner cities. One thing you're seeing now is that even within regions, you have growing gaps between, like, the one city that's doing really well and then a whole bunch of others that are kind of falling behind. In Ohio, that city is Columbus. Columbus has just really kind of separated itself from a whole bunch of other cities in the state, and is more and more kind of drawing young people, you know, who go to Columbus for Ohio State, and then they don't come back. And that's become a real problem in a lot of parts of the country where you have those kind of regional hub towns that kind of absorb the more ambitious, more higher educated young folks from smaller cities around the state.
Alec, we'll leave it there for now, but I hope we can talk to you about these issues in the future. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Alec McGillis covers politics and government for ProPublica. We've been talking about his piece, How Struggling Dayton, Ohio Reveals the Chasm Among American Cities. There's also a Frontline documentary on this. It's called Left Behind America. It's available to stream at pbs.org.